you're talking about the discrimination at the union. And was there a time when black workers at the plant organized any kind of resistance to that, or any kind of?
No, they didn't. They didn't really do that, but I don't know what they should have or not, but they didn't do it. They didn't, not against the union work and all. They had one or two blacks in there sort of, you know, with a position in the union, but most everything, in other words, what they would try to get through, they was outvoted long, and so we never didn't make too much progress along that line as far as goes along about land, like I said, lots of them did move up, you know, some of those jobs, a lot of those black got some of those jobs that even now, because they had age on the white, and some of them really got those jobs, but the job I was on, I didn't ever, by that time, like I say, I was getting ready to leave out there, and I didn't pursue no further, try to get in the other department, you know, and do no rolling or nothing like that. But now, lots of them did get those jobs before it was over with, because, but at first, for a long time, you couldn't get them.
Did you go to union meetings?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. It's a mix, you know. Black and white went together, you know, as far as the union meeting is concerned.
Everything. Oh, it's integrated union
meeting? Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, they'd all meet at the same hall, and naturally, at that time, for seating and everything, there's segregated, but it's all in the same meeting, you know, and most of the leaders, they had one or two black, but most of the leaders were white, and we'd all sit there and listen to the, you know, what they'd have to see what they had to say and everything. So we all met at the same hall, like you said, but it was just sort of segregated in there, and so.
Do you remember the local number?
Let me see, what is that number? I believe it was 1489, I believe it was in Inland. I believe that's what it was, I'm not sure. 1489, I believe it was.
What was life like in general for you and your family in Birmingham during the 40s and 50s?
Well, as I said, like under the circumstances, like thing was, if you just go ahead on and sort of make yourself satisfied, I mean, it was pretty good in a way, you know, but segregation was there, and we knew it was there, and so we didn't worry too much about, you know, and so we got along pretty good. Yeah, a whole lot of things you couldn't do, a lot of places you couldn't go for that go, but we just sort of made ourselves satisfied. You know.
When you would go shopping and buy food and clothing and stuff, where would you go?
We would go to the main stores, you know, we'd go there and shop and certain eating places you couldn't go in, you know, all that. But for the stores, you know, they had all them open. You could go anywhere you wanted there and trade for that go. Uh-huh. And so that's what we did. And grocery stores and the clothing stores, all them, they was open. You could go there and buy anything you wanted. But
Did you patronize the, like, Black Business District, or kind of a
Well, yeah, sometimes if they had a pretty good business, they'd say, hey, we'd patronize them, but now lots of time you had to go to these other stores to get what you really want, you know, because it wasn't too many big black businesses at that time, you know. They had some places, but we did a lot of trading at the main stores, like White Run Store, Pizzitz, Loveman, all those big stores like that. Mm-hmm. We did lots of business there.
Mm-hmm. Did you have children by this time?
Yeah, we just had one child anyway, one son. And so he lived with us a while after we got him, and he went off in college, and then from college to he went in service. And he made a career in the Air Force. And so he wasn't living with us too much here, you know.
What were the symbols of Jim Crow and segregation in Birmingham?
Well, that's my wife. That's all right.
That's okay. I'm feeding cats.
Well, the only thing I can say is it was rough for like they said, as long as you stay in your place, what they call your place, you make it very well. But if you try to do anything that they think you ought not to do, they say you was one of those smart guys. And so
what happened then?
Well, at that time, they would, anything might happen, because the thing about it, if he complained too much or tried to do something about it, well, the law was on his side. They wasn't gonna protect you as long as you was in conflict with some white man. Then they just gonna jump on you or put you in jail or do something. You didn't have no rights for it. That go.
Do you know of incidents of that happening with friends or stories
you heard? Well, I've seen a lot of it happen. I can't hardly call names exactly who, but I've seen a lot of it happen, you know, among the blacks. Seen that. Well, the other man was really in the wrong, but if he tried to defend himself any kind of way, where the law gonna come, they gonna up on the black, they gonna blame it all. They gonna try to see where it started or who was at fault, but just out of him, he's automatically wrong. They're gonna take him on to jail. Sometimes beat him up, I understand. Mm-hmm. So all that we had to go through with.
Did you have, during that time, you had, of course, Gene Connor, Bull Connor.
Oh yeah, he's rough.
What did you think about him?
Oh, he was something else, I'm telling you. He's automatically against all blacks. And so yeah, he was something. Yeah. And well, wasn't nothing we could do about it. As I said, we didn't have no voters or nothing, so they'd vote him right back in every year because most of them liked what he was doing, see? And so he's always ready to beat up on or encourage the others, his police department, to beat up on blacks and everything. So we had all that to go through with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Were you able to keep contact with your family in Pickens County?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I would go down there, but also, I had a brother down there and sisters and all my sisters and things, most of them were down there. I'd go down there, I'd write them, and I'd be in contact with them most of the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, when you were involved in the voting rights, or when you began to be involved in the voting rights school, you were able to register in 1952, or?
I believe, I don't know the exact year, but it's somewhere along then I was able to register.
Do you remember who you voted for?
No, I don't, but I know how, the mayor at that time, let me see, did they have, it was a commission government at that time, it wasn't mayor, but anyway, I know I voted against Bull Connor. Who's there running? I think it's Sebo or somebody was running against him. I voted for him and several others, well, and the other, like the governor race and all, well, I tell you, I voted against George Wallace, because he's another, and he's almost like Bull Connor for his black concern, and so I voted against him. All them hardcore fellas like that, I voted for the next lesser evil. Some of them, you know, well, I wasn't perfect, but some of them were better than they were. Right. And so I voted. But for remembering exactly who, I can't remember.
Did either political party on a national level, Democrats, Republicans, appeal to you during those years?
Well, look like at that time, the Democrats look like a little bit more liberal, you know, than most of the Republican was, and so. Now, in some cases, some of the leaders, I didn't stick with the party all the time back then, because sometimes the Republicans would sound better, you know, talk more in favor of what they do for all the people than the Democrat. Well, who's never talked like what they're going to do more right for all the people? Well, that's the one I would usually vote for, see. But I've been voting Democrat most of my life, though. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you remember when the NAACP was outlawed in Alabama?
Yeah. Yeah, that's when it's Fred Shuttleworth, and then they organized this Alabama Move for Christian, Alabama Christian Movement. I remember well when that happened. You know, they outlawed the NAACP, and so that organization was born then, and Shuttleworth was leading that, and they just having meetings. One time they had a meeting every night in the week, but at least. She got him spoiled, but at that time they had this having meetings very pretty regular, and he's working in cahoot with Martin Luther King, and so they used to come here, and they had lots of meetings here in Birmingham. Well, I would go to most of those meetings, you know, so and so it was pretty rough then. We were trying to get things straightened out a little better. So,
was there a lot of? Do you remember the tone of the conversations during those meetings? Was there a lot of debate over strategy?
Well, a good little bit, but now, what they would do, they would have policemen there every night, this meeting was. They'd have them to come to hear what was being said, you see. And they'd go to a certain extent, but I think when they really get ready for this strategy, they'd have a private meeting, you know, where they would know. But now, but they would come out open. Most of the things they're going to do, they'd see it right there, and they'd know about it. Police was writing down everything was said, you know, in these meetings. And so they was up and up, you know, on whatever was going on mostly. So they didn't try to keep too much of it secret from them, because, I attend those meetings, and they'd make plans and everything. They'd tell them when they're going to march and all, so. They'd be well aware of whenever they're going to put on a march or anything, so. Because they'd speak it open in the meeting.
What did you think about those marches?
Well, I don't know. I guess it helped some. They're showing protest anyway. It's protest marches, you see. And just letting them know they wasn't satisfied with what was going on. A whole lot of the marches had a whole lot to do with the passing of the Civil Rights Bill and all that, you see. Mm-hmm.
But at the time, did they seem to you to be too militant or too...
Well, no, it didn't seem to be. Sometimes it might seem that way, but I left it up to their judgment. I think they made some pretty good judgments, I think, but all we could do is protest, and so we wasn't satisfied with it. Where things are going.
What were the major changes that you saw in Birmingham during those years?
Well, one thing, they had those buses and things so segregated, and they began to open them up where you could ride anywhere, because I know way back there it was so bad. You get on a bus, you try to catch a bus, a streetcar, they had bus and streetcar running. If they had what they call a board, that is a segregation board, they'd have it back so far in the bus. Sometimes they have it well over halfway, but most times a whole lot more black riding than it was white, and they'd have it way back there. Well, you'd have to go on below that board, regardless to how many, be plenty of seats sometime up front. But you had to, it depend on who the bus driver was and all. Some of them nicer than others. Some of them go back there and move that board up, you know, and some of them wouldn't. You just got to pack back there and to the back and stay back there in the back, and all them seats up there, you couldn't sit down them. And then another thing, if it's sort of crowded up there for the whites, you had to go down to the door and pay him your money, and then walk right back around and go in the back. The bus, you know, you couldn't come down through there where they were and all that. So it was really rough. As I said, it had a whole lot to do with the bus drivers and all. Some of them was nicer than others. Some of them, he'd move the seat all the way up, and nobody wasn't just a few white there. You know, now you plenty of room with the others. Sometimes they didn't care. They just let you stand there.
Were you riding the bus during those years?
Well, those early years I was, in the early 50s. I think I got a car in about 52 when I got my first car. But up until then, I was riding the bus, and that's what I had to go through with, you know.
Were you relieved when you got your car?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was relieved. I didn't have to get on that bus then. Yeah, I was relieved very much.
When you were riding the bus, did you see or hear of black people who just said, forget this segregation thing, I'm going to sit where I...
Well, once in a while that would happen, but as I said, see what they could do then. I've seen them stop the bus and call the police and come down and they take them off and come to jail. Just sit above that boy. Yeah. See if he, sometimes he wouldn't say nothing. He just stop the bus and go call the police. He'd come down and get them off of there. So that's all that you had to go through with. And so the law's on his side. See?
Did it seem like there were more women than men who would challenge that, or the other way around?
Well,
it's kind of a mix.
It's sort of a mix. Once in a while, yeah. Sort of a mix, well, I know.
Mm-hmm. A couple questions on your experience as a voting rights instructor.
Mm-hmm.
Who taught you
do that? Well, I tell you, I went over it so much, we had papers on that, and we just went over that a lot to ourselves and learned them, those questions and things, and we got to a place where we could help others, you know. We just learned them got them by heart, mostly, and in that way we could help others, you know. But sometimes they'd come up with some other, you didn't never know exactly what they was going to ask, you know, the people, because they'd try to come up with different things that they thought they couldn't answer. And we just went over and went over enough so we'd know them ourselves, then we could help others, you know. That's the way we did. We didn't have no special teacher to teach us. We just went over.
Do you remember some of the early breakthroughs in getting people to vote?
Well, I can't just name it right now, but I do know, you know, several occasions where they would, lots of them we was training would go up there and they would pass, you know, the board and everything. And a lot of cases were So our school, it helped a whole lot because we got quite a few people, you know, to vote. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember any particularly notorious registrars in Birmingham? People who seemed to be tougher than others, or was it just everybody was?
Well, I don't know, but like you said, some of them was tougher than others, you know, you'd go before, and I don't know none of them by name or nothing like that, but I do know some of them was easier on them than others, and you get some that it was tough, they just wouldn't, in other words, they just wasn't going, if they make up their mind, I guess they're going to pass two or three that day, they'd do it, but they're going to ask others some questions, and they gonna find some way to turn them down. You see, they I think they was instructed not to pass, but just a few or something like that. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember a place in Birmingham called Dynamite Hill?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know. I know where it is. On up. What is that, Center Street, or what is that? But anyway, I know where it is. Up there, just above Lawyer's Shoals. I believe that's Center Street. It's off of Center Street, back to your left, going out that way. And they called it Dynamite Hill because it had several dynamites set off up in there, you know, a different home, including Lawyer Scholl's house, all that. And they called it, they named it Dynamite Hill because they set off several of them up in there.
Mm-hmm. Were you able to, you say you had one daughter?
No, I didn't have one son.
Oh, one son.
Mm-hmm.
Did you end up sending him to college?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which college did he?
He went to A&M Huntsville, up in Huntsville, A&M.
So each generation, in a way, went a little further.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right.
Well, Mr. Williams, I know that